Congratulations.
You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me, Maysoon Wazwaz.
We're out here at the beautiful Headlands Center for the arts. Sometimes you forget how those words kind of go
they come
and
together.
What combination they've got.
Yeah.
I was raised by
sea lions. Were you raised by sea lions?
That's why I'm such a good swimmer, Maysoon.
Oh. Do you make certain sounds when you're swimming like sea lions do?
I don't think they make them as much when they're swimming as when they're on the land.
What happens when you're swimming?
You're silent.
You're a pretty solid swimmer. I've seen you before.
You gotta be quiet. The sea lions have to be quiet because if they make a lot of sounds while they're swimming, they scare away the fish.
Oh, well, they're built to be. What
you know
it?
The
like water torpedoes, kind of? Is that a
water
weird?
Torpedoes.
Kind of a weird thing to say about a sea lion.
Point is, Maysoon, what's a land torpedo? An air torpedo is a missile. Let's not get into that. There's already
but we are at the Headlands, so it makes a certain amount of sense to talk about missiles.
Rich
with
history of the military.
Yeah, there's the Nike missile site out here where there's still a missile. I don't know if it's,
what?
I imagine it's defunct at this point, but there's a missile there that you can go see.
Like underground or?
I believe so. I've seen video and images. It's actually a missile.
Well, fair enough.
So we've got some missiles, but
that's
as
terrifying.
You say, that's an air missile. What, maybe, what would a land missile be?
It would have
nothing
to have
really. Yeah, but then is it really missile-like?
Probably
look
a little bit
the,
like
have
a
the
centipede.
Feeling of kind of flying through the air.
So maybe for the listeners at home, they'll be wondering why we sound a little weird. And it's because we're recording this live.
We're recording this, yeah.
Got speakers. Let's give a layout of the room.
Let's describe the room. So
this is the rodeo room.
The rodeo room in the main building, which is the building with the mess hall or the dining room downstairs. This room, the rodeo room, was designed by
David Ireland.
So
as was so much of
the Headlands. Yeah. And it's a beautiful room. The paint is stripped away and it's just the sort of natural or raw plaster.
Well, but then doesn't he go back in with some polyurethane?
Yeah.
And that's why it's so goddamn shiny.
It's super shiny, but it's just
like cheese.
Gorgeous the way it's been preserved, I think. The walls. Hello.
Like a sweaty cheese.
Especially in this light, I guess.
Yep.
Well, there's a couple benches set up.
Some very unusual shaped benches that make, when they're all arranged properly, they make the shape of an eye, a human eye. You've got your tin ceiling.
You have some exposed light bulbs in here, so the light is a little bit harsh, which helps with the glossy glowing of things.
Mm-hmm. Little known fact, David Ireland had a very bushy mustache.
He did. He was a very handsome fellow. No, not that handsome. I wanted to do him or anything. Have you seen the video of him making the dumb ball?
Yeah, with the gloves on.
Right.
And that's even like older.
Yeah, it was a beautiful video. He's a very
lovely,
lovely
man. Handsome.
I actually almost brought with me a dumb ball that one of our mutual friends made when they were in grad school.
So anyhow, we're in the rodeo room. This is the second floor of the old main building.
The old main building.
You know, the one that's got the kitchen.
I said that.
And the bathrooms.
We'll say it again.
Which were also designed by David Ireland.
And it also has the key room, a newer installation.
Very new.
The
newest permanent installation.
By our dear friend and artist, Carrie Hott.
Carrie Hott. You're the most recent contributor to the permanent installations out here at the Headlands with your... The key room.
Yes.
Which is pretty much the best one.
The best permanent installation?
Out here at the Headlands. But part
what are
of
the other permanent installations? Oh, I guess the whole bathroom.
You're in one.
David
Ireland.
Shit. Right.
Yeah.
With the sweating cheese.
And the sweaty cheese walls is what we've been calling it.
And sure enough, that means that you know everything there is to know about the Headlands. So
Carrie has a very
It's like the
Deep
saying,
insight.
The more you know, the more that you don't know.
Right.
Or you know that you don't know.
That's
so I'm in
a Buddhist.
That boat. Yeah.
That's your Buddhist koan.
Yes.
Point is, drop some knowledge on us.
One of my favorite experiences here, just being out here a lot, is at night hearing the howling, hearing coyotes howling and calling to each other. And that
yipping.
Happens in groups. And it's really beautiful.
Yeah.
It's really, really one of the best parts of being here at night.
Did you have any ghostly experiences?
I heard a lot of ghost stories, which I think gives you a loaded experience when you're in the building, especially at night. And then there was a time that I heard my name and no one was there.
Shut up.
But that was the closest experience I had.
Maybe that was just the wind.
That's yeah, really scary.
Yeah.
Especially with a two-syllable name.
Especially with a name like Carrie.
It might have been someone just called it and then didn't.
And did disappear.
And, maybe
and then away. Gave up on
they
it.
They wanted to give yeah. you a very special experience.
Yeah.
We're talking
to... Oh, this
to
is Sean.
Sean, how do you say your last name?
Uehara.
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 Talk real close there.
Uehara. Yeah, almost like you're kissing it.
But don't kiss Sean. It.
Yeah, okay. That's great.
I'm ready.
Do you guys dulcet warn tones. People? Do you warn people about the possible presence of ghosts when they're coming for residency?
The blood
no,
dripping from
we,
the wall?
We, cause you we talk about something much more terrifying, which is that you can't use your cell phone here. that generally...
I noticed that.
It's a good... I don't know, winnowing process, I suppose.
Do you get a lot of people that they've gone through the process, they've applied and all that, they come here, they're like, oh, I can't use my cell phone, goodbye, I'm
this
going back to Croatia.
Me.
I think that it's a thing, it's one of those things not. Where the idea of not using your cell phone is like, all right, that's wonderful. Then they get here and the reality, the mundanity
oh, yeah.
of not being able to use your cell phone.
Start to set in.
It's just... It's just not as good as how it sounds.
Sure enough.
That one particular thing. But
so are you avoiding the question about are you avoiding the question about ghosts? I'm just wondering.
Ghost. Oh, sorry. Ghost.
Is there an NDA?
I think there's a good third of the people that come through here leave believing that there is some kind of a metaphysical presence in the rooms. I don't think they're dangerous or violent.
No,
I don't think so either.
But just the uncanniness of feeling that, I don't know, that otherworldliness is frightening for people.
And they're mostly, from what I've heard, they're mostly feeling it in the apartments, like where they're staying versus like in the actual studios.
Yeah, and I guess when I say frightening, I'd say most people are kind of like, who believe in it are more tickled by the idea of it. And then there's like a few people that are more just freaked out.
Yeah.
By the fact of it. But if you want to know all the ghost stories, you have to ask Holly.
Oh,
she okay. knows. I mean, she has,
Holly
when she does
Blake.
The tours, if you yeah. want, she'll actually tell you which rooms are the most haunted. Kind of like what you were talking about
oh
earlier.
Oh my God.
But you know what it means is like, your stuff will be rearranged or doors that you expected to be closed will be open or, you know, stuff like that where it's not really, you're not running for the hills. You're just mm-hmm. more like pondering it. Later, like, is that way? How can that be? That kind of thing, like a David Blaine trick
on?
Or something.
What? Yeah, that's like, did I turn the light on?
Exactly.
I can't mm-hmm. remember. I was sort of falling asleep.
I also heard recently that some places just have like a very, very low frequency droning sound that makes
Ooh.
Humans feel that kind of uneasiness that there might be like something lurking around.
You mean
them.
Something that's like kind of subsonic that just
yeah.
you feel with your body?
Yeah. And that it like just happens around places.
Maybe there's some kind of harmonic resonance in the residency.
We're gonna be talking with Shannon Abak. Come sit right next to me.
Do you get free? Do you? They give you free food?
Yeah, we get free dinners 5 nights a week as a graduate fellow.
Wow,
that's so nice.
It is amazing.
And most of the artists take that, I assume.
Like, yeah, I think so.
I've always heard it as like the time when everyone's like at the table sharing ideas and getting to know one another,
and
which
like kind of
so
hooking
sweet.
Up sexually.
I don't know about
Kate's
all
like,
that.
Can we get right into the hookups? Great.
We were talking earlier about residencies being like hookup spots
yeah.
for young artists.
Yeah, definitely. I'm not living here on the
oh, you're
premises,
missing out.
So I don't
That's
get in
okay.
on all that stuff.
Good for you. So you're one of the grad fellows. Did you have an interview when you were applying to be that person?
How did that go?
Was it in this room?
It was in this very room.
Does it give you bad feelings to be back in here? Actually, probably not.
No, that was a huge success for you.
Now that I got the residency, it's good. But I was so nervous at the time. I'm not a big like interviewer or public speaker at all. I get
You're
very
doing
shy.
Great.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But Holly and Sean were so nice and warm. They made it an easy experience.
Oh, awesome. Sean's one of the interviewers now.
Yep. Kate also got to interview in this room.
Obviously, I did not get the fellowship. I was one of the final two. And before my interview, I was hanging out with my friend Barbara because I got here 2 hours early on accident. And sure enough.
Not on accident.
And sure enough, a wild turkey attacked my friend Barbara. And truly.
There's wild turkeys.
There's
here?
Wild turkeys oh, everywhere. Yeah. They're enormous. Seen them. They're like dinosaurs.
You definitely
and
wanna
we saw two of them gobbling like turkeys would down. You know, down below, down the stairs from here, you know?
Yeah.
And my friend Barbara was just like, oh, turkeys are so stupid. We could just walk right up to them and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, Barbara, you need to stay away from those turkeys because they're enormous. And anyhow, she just walked, just brazenly walked right up to one and it like went at her.
Yeah.
And we heard later that you don't, it's not the beak that you need to watch out for. It's the feet.
The talons.
The talons, yeah. Which are like knives. So anyhow, I was very shaken up by that, as you can imagine. We ran away and we're fine. But then I, sure enough, I had my interview and all I could talk about during the interview, and back then it was with Holly Blake and Brian Carl, and Brian Carl is
be nice.
Was very scary. And anyhow, all I could talk about was how I was going to carpool. So needless to say,
to get out here,
it was a disaster.
Oh, did you tell them the turkey story as well?
No. Yes, no. I don't remember.
You should
I
have.
I thought that would have been out. A good story.
They might have been like a little bit.
I think they just were not feeling it. Although I love Holly Blake. Anyhow, good yeah. for you that you weathered all that.
You are currently in residence yeah. here.
Thank awesome. You. Haven't encountered any turkeys.
That's good. Watch out for them.
Coyotes.
Ooh, yeah, tell us about the coyotes.
Just everywhere, randomly. I think they're beautiful. I didn't grow up with coyotes. I grew up in Hawaii where we don't have that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
So to me, it's pretty cool. And I see them a lot at Rodeo Beach down.
Do they travel in packs or are they usually solo? We were trying to figure this out.
I've
earlier.
Always seen them solo.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I thought.
Yeah. Oh,
can you tell us a little bit about your work since we don't have any visuals for our
in
friends sitting in
the
audience?
Most painless way
oh,
that
yeah.
you can
oh,
tolerate.
Oh, yeah. Maybe just, yeah.
Don't feel under pressure.
Okay. So in grad school, I worked for 3 years primarily with ceramics and melting ceramic materials and formulating new recipes for clay. So coming here, there isn't a ceramic facility I that
say.
I can work with.
Oh, there isn't?
I think it's because of the it being a national park and having a kiln here would be a little
yeah.
dangerous.
That's a federal yeah. crime.
So I got to be careful with that. So I kind of am just coming out here and experimenting with all the different materials that I might have wanted to experiment with in the past 3 years. So that includes like expanding foam, hot Ooh. Glue. I'm also taking some clippings of invasive species from around the area
oh.
and kind of making my own plants out of them. Like imagining a future where all of this nature doesn't exist and we have to make our own parks out of artificial and natural materials.
Cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like after the apocalypse.
Yeah, a lot what? Of my work is quite apocalyptic and sci-fi and all
what's going to happen that's going to cause the apocalypse?
I'm not sure. What do you think?
I don't know. Somebody was telling me about solar flares that would create giant natural electromagnetic pulses that would shut down all of our technology.
Wow. And that would be the beginning.
And that would kind of throw a real wrench in civilization.
I'd like to read more about that.
Right on. But you're prepared for any apocalypse.
Sure, what, I'm ready. I think may. About it all the time.
She's prepared so. To recreate.
That's fascinating. Major.
We will so build back.
Aww. Another thing we've been talking about quite a lot today, almost nonstop, is ghosts. Mm-hmm. Have you had any visitations? Do you believe in ghosts? Are you open to having a connection to the
Would
other
like
world?
Would you like us to arrange
Would you
one
like
for
us to
you?
Summon one right now?
I remember as a kid, my mom said, if you're open to that kind of stuff, that you're going to see that kind of stuff. So I think I kind of shut it down as a young child.
Good for you. Do they have a lot of ghosts
true.
In Hawaii?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Full of ghosts.
Like which ones?
I don't know the exact story.
Which one?
Have you been to a volcano?
Yes.
Is that part of your inspiration for your work of the magma and the hot flowing thing?
Ooh, maybe. Yes. I think there's a lot of underground inspiration from
I
where
I think I might have just cracked that whole thing open for you.
I think you did. You cracked it for me for sure. Just now.
Just kidding.
You just made kidding. A connection.
So do you have any tips for people that maybe are coming for their grad fellowship interview at the end of this school year and let them know how to handle that.
Yeah, how do you get process. A residency here?
What slides did you have specifically? How many did you have?
Were they detailed or, you know, full installation
shots?
Did
you test them out before you came, where you had people sit and look at them on a projector and help you decide what order they would be in?
Well, Sean Uehara is from Hawaii.
Ooh. Be from Hawaii or pretend you're from Hawaii. That's tip number one.
I think the biggest tip that I got from prior graduate fellows was to make it clear how much you're going to use your studio.
Yeah. That is so...
Number one.
People told me that when I had my thing, and I think...
The carpool thing.
There's a fine line.
Fixated on the carpool.
Let it be known, but don't... Make sure you let other things be known as well.
Yeah.
And don't just focus on that.
Good advice.
Yeah.
I didn't prepare very much. I was actually really surprised that I was a finalist, so... There wasn't a lot of time to get things together for the interview. But
how many students graduate from the program at SF State?
We had a very small class of... We had originally 5, and at the last moment, somebody had to postpone. So we ended up with 4
Oh, wow.
Graduates in my class.
Were people upset that they didn't get
it? Yeah, I was going to say, did you have to look
the
other
finalists? That can be real high stress in
right
the
in
schools.
The face.
I think they were fine. I think everyone's doing well now. Maybe in the moment it didn't feel so great, but yeah.
Sounds like you're all like really mature, well-adjusted people.
Yeah, and we're all friends, so yeah.
I don't know, friends or not, I used to work at Mills at the museum there, and
it got
there were
raw.
Some years where
it raw.
Got really nasty
if you
during like the award time. Oh man.
Yeah, it's hard.
If people would really come out of the woodwork on something,
you would
like,
have
whoa.
To go hide. The day it was announced,
right,
you would
if you
just
want something,
hide.
You couldn't be happy about it. You just had to be like, yeah, it's cool.
People would be walking around like it was a funeral. It's hard.
You just have to like try to tell yourself that good things are going to happen for all of us in time.
Yeah,
I like it.
That's a good approach.
Good attitude.
Did you ever have any embarrassing studio visits?
Not that I can remember.
At all?
Mike Arcega is in the audience.
Ooh.
One of my favorite critiques with Mike was, I hope it's okay if I say this.
Yeah, yeah.
You kind of walked in and you were like, I'm bored.
Bam.
Ooh, did you say
Cut
that?
Cut to the chase.
Mike Arcega. Damn.
I might be paraphrasing that.
That's tough love right there.
I love that kind of critique because I was also bored and I had been getting positive critique from my seminar and I didn't understand and I connected with him on that. I was like, yeah, I'm not enjoying making this work. So.
Damn.
It was a memorable moment. It was helpful.
That basically changed your life.
It helped me move along in grad school, and Mike was on my final review committee, and he just always tells it how it is, so that
Sweet.
Helped me.
Maybe I letting have a studio visit with you.
Yeah.
I had to actually tell faculty sometimes, like, I can handle some harsher critique. Like, I'm not going to cry.
Well, thank you so much for talking to
thank
us
you.
Today
Thanks
and
for
meeting two
here.
Random weirdos in this yellow room. And as always, congratulations.
I think people, sort of, especially in our studio, they kind of are like, our studio, this room, it seems like they kind of poke their head in and are like, oh, there's these two ladies talking. That's kind of awkward. Maybe I'll just walk by.
Do that. When I would come to the Headlands Open Studios and somebody was doing a live thing, man, there was a guy. I want to think he was Italian, but I feel like anytime I meet someone from Europe, I automatically think they're Italian, no matter if they're French or English or Russian or whatever.
They're always Italian.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, an Italian guy.
Why do you think that?
I don't know. I'm not very worldly.
Yes, you are.
Anyhow, so I'm assuming this guy was Italian, but he could have been French, German, Belgian.
Right. From
and
anywhere, really.
He had a room, and the room was just, like, covered in, I don't know, mats or something. And he was kind
was
of lounging on a couch. He seemed like a little bit of a bon vivant. or whatever, like a good time guy.
Good time guy.
And he was chilling on the couch, and people would come into his studio, and he would be like, oh, just wait. Can you just wait for 10 minutes until we get enough people in here and I'll really talk to about something, like about what he was working on or whatever. Wow. This was years ago. And so I walk in, I take 3 steps in. Okay. This guy of unknown origin said this stuff, and I just turned around and just swiftly.
He literally said, like, hold on one minute while I get people together.
He was like, well, let's get like at least 10 people in here.
And you're like,
and I was like, no, thank you. And as I was going out, I like the people that were coming in, I was like, no, it's a trap.
Oh, really?
Like, it's a trap. It's a trap.
Was it? Were you part of his performance? Do you
no,
think?
I don't know what he was doing.
He was just on one.
I'm sure it was phenomenal.
Are you drinking more coffee?
They don't get silly people out here, Maysoon. They get serious
Hi.
Artists.
Angela, come on in.
Yay. Easy. So we're out here at the Headlands talking to Angela Willits, artist, performer. Would you say that?
I'm starting to say that, yeah.
No need really to differentiate.
I really feel like you're a performer.
Well, I was a painter, and performing is new.
Oh.
So it's still a little uncomfortable to say that's what I am, but I guess I am.
Easy to say artist. So yeah. Many things fall under that umbrella.
Yeah, exactly.
Where are you from?
England.
Wow.
Originally. But I've lived in the Bay Area for, like, 18 years, 17, 18 years.
Now, and you were a graduate of which school?
Bay UC Area? Davis.
UC Davis, great.
Go Aggies.
Aggies.
Yeah.
Yeah, go Aggies.
How is that program? I feel like I rarely hear about what's happening at UC Davis.
Well, they just got their new museum.
Oh, yeah, there's a new museum.
Well, the new museum.
Which is really exciting.
Which is very super exciting. I'm actually hoping that I'm going to be working there.
Woo! Yeah.
Good.
But the program is fantastic. It's very interdisciplinary. You don't have to pick a discipline. You don't have to, you know, I came in as a painter and stopped doing that very quickly at everybody's encouragement.
I feel like that's a prerequisite of grad school, is that you go in as one thing and everyone's like,
right,
throw that all away and do something
completely
different.
It's amazing. And it's very experimental. I mean, you know, I guess the most famous alum from there is Bruce Nauman. And so there's still a lot of that.
My favorite. Like, it's the only one you need.
Pretty much the only one you need, yeah.
But it still has that kind of, that desire for work that's experimental and maybe not always super sellable.
Marketable.
Or good. You know, beautiful.
Right? Perfect.
So the number one most important thing that we've been asking people that are residents here is, have you seen any ghosts?
I have not seen any ghosts, and I am here late at night often.
Have you felt any ghosts?
No, but I'm also maybe not somebody that really believes in ghosts.
I was going to say,
so
if you're not open to it, they won't
come.
Yeah,
they're probably not going to visit me.
Yeah, I think there's definitely some truth to that.
Another thing that we've been trying to get people to weigh in on today is whether or not it's okay to swim in the Pacific Ocean.
Definitely not.
In Northern California. You seem like someone who's done it.
I have done it.
Yeah.
You have?
Yeah. You kind of have to.
Do you surf? Are you a surfer?
No.
You just go...
I just go in for fun. Well, I used to have a dog.
Do you have a wetsuit?
No.
Oh, damn.
Fuck yeah, you don't. That's cool.
Well, I mean, I didn't go in on a cold day, but yeah, I mean, if it's a warm day, you can get a little cold and run in and run out and swim a little bit. And,
yeah.
How do you contend with the sneaker waves, the riptides, and the other dangers?
I didn't know they existed, so I guess I just...
This is a problem.
I just dangerous. Went in completely innocently and didn't know that might happen to me.
People think it's the Mediterranean or something. Yeah. It's not. It's dangerous.
I'm also not in there really long enough for anything to happen.
Maysoon is terrified, and I had no idea. We've been doing this podcast.
I love it, but from afar. I'm just like, just love it so much.
We've been doing this podcast for 2.5 years, and I had no idea.
We've never really talked about the ocean and the dangers of the ocean. Huge, huge dangers and threats.
I love
don't
it.
Think so.
I love it.
I think it's pretty safe.
Yeah. We'll do it, Maysoon. We'll do an episode from the water.
Okay, I'll be on shore.
Yeah.
Anyhow, so what's your work like?
Yeah, let's get back to it.
You do
here.
A
well,
lot of
I was about to tell you that my most recent piece is going to be in the, well, I'll be doing some of it in the ocean.
Oh,
so,
cool.
And different bodies of water. So, yeah, my work is mostly interacting with different materials. Some, and it's starting to be in different environments. It used to always just be in my studio, but now that I'm here and I can make use of all of these different beautiful environments, it's becoming going into environments and finding materials that are interesting to me, and then I just put them on my body and move around and see what happens and try to kind of develop some kind of a relationship between me and the material or me and the environment. So while I was away over the summer, I started a piece in the lake in Maine at Skowhegan. And there
we'll come back to that.
Oh, okay. And so I had my GoPro camera and I was just taking kind of random footage of me under the water. And then I tried to walk on the water and I made these weird foam shoes and I tried to walk out.
Oh, cool.
So set myself the task of walking on water and failed miserably. But so that, I think, isn't the piece, but I think it was the beginning of the piece that I now want to make, which will be all these different bodies of water and interacting with the water and I don't know which ways, but underneath it and above it, and try to think about the contrast between those two things.
I watched one of your videos where it looked like you had like a bread dough or something.
Yeah,
was that what it
was? Yeah, it was salt dough. It's like what kids put like Play-Doh.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
right, because it was too like almost too runny.
It was very satisfying to watch.
It was very satisfying to do as well.
I love that too.
Yeah, it feels like it has the weight of flesh, kind of. It's very, you know, it's because there's so much water content. It's very kind of like heavy. Wobbly and heavy.
Which there's one moment where you have it like resting
where it's
up
drooping.
Here, and it just looks so, I'm just like, oh my god, I want that on my back.
It can
and
be
like,
arranged.
It feels like a still massage. Just like the weight alone.
Yeah. There is a lot of that with my work of like having to just let the material kind of do its own thing on my body and see what that kind of feels like, and then that.
But then there is like there are moments where you're kind of like fighting it a little bit, or you're just like trying to manage it, but it doesn't want to be managed, which is interesting.
No, I like the pushback from the material.
Yeah.
And so the piece that I have in my studio right now is another piece that I made at Skowhegan, where I cut all the bark off of silver birch trees, and because it retained its kind of circular shape, I decided I needed to be inside of it. So there's that same like fight of wanting to like be with the material, be one with the material, but at the same time it kind of
the material is also rejecting you. It's like you're part of this.
That's cool.
That's interesting.
Well, we have another artist that appeared. I feel like I'm Pokemon with artists.
I love it. Arseny?
Yeah.
Will you say your last name for us?
Yeah. Arseny Zhilev.
Zhilev.
Yeah.
From Russia.
Yeah.
Cool.
Your work is somewhat political, but also you're focusing more on like relation, like museum.
It calls Stalin strike, but it's not like real strike, let's say, but it's kind of metaphor for possible strike in field of art. And Italian strike is
Italian strike. That's what you're working on here.
It's a special term. Yeah, Italian strike. It's not like strike by Italian people,
right?
By Italian workers, but a special term in English. Additional term for that is work to rule, something like that. Work to book, which means that when people do not allow to do strike, then they can use this Italian strike. So you continue your work, but do everything according to rules, you know? And when you do everything according to rules, work becomes pretty slow. And so that's how you can continue your work, but protest somehow.
Mm-hmm.
I guess in the field of contemporary art, this Italian strike means kind of ironical description of artists who want to be very fancy, you know, very trendy, keep right political position, do everything according to rules, but it doesn't work. And second layer is a discussion about acceleration and technology. Should we accelerate, let's say, capitalism according to book and according to rules in order to gain its end, or we should slow down immediately. And what else? This exhibition is from 2060s, I guess. So it's like from the future.
Cool.
Yeah, and I'm here. I'm just assistant of curator. So
So wait, should we all be going on strike?
why not? But, but in this case, we should really speak slowly, really slowly, or maybe just use all rules of recorded sound.
We gotta
sound.
Really figure out some podcast rules. Yeah. There aren't very many. If we're gonna like strictly abide by them. Okay. So like with the Italian strike, it was like workers, like factory workers?
No, Italian strike is term. You know, it appeared because, I guess because it was for the first time in Italy, because police in Italy and railroad workers started to use it. But in my case, it's just imaginary group exhibition, from the future. And meanwhile, there is one radio, Radio Free Dream, which was about slowing down, and it was kind of alternative to internet, because you know, like first computers used cassettes, you know, like audio cassettes for recording information. They have sound, you can listen it, and it sounds like noise music or something like that. So it was the idea to broadcast software for free without any censorship and resist to super turbo technologies and the internet with this slow radio station. Became extremely popular around robots and old-fashioned computers
robots.
In the area. Yeah, especially who feel a lot of nostalgia to 20th century. So right now it's very popular radio in Bay Area. So you should be careful about that.
Oh yeah.
At potentially your competitor.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for chatting with us today and taking the time out from this very busy Open Studios. Yeah. And as always, congratulations. Will you introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Cassandra Troyan, and I'm from Columbus, Ohio, and that's where I met Kate, and I did my BA at OSU.
So anyhow, what are you doing now in the Bay Area?
Yeah. Well, I'm currently in artisan residency here at the Headlands on a writing residency.
Ooh.
But I moved to Oakland within the past year. And, you know, just decided to be here since I have a number of friends who are in the area. And I had been in Chicago for about 5 years and just, you know, wanted to change and was really into, a lot of the writing and the kind of, like, social and political kind of environment of the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm. Maysoon's from Chicago.
I am from Chicago.
When you were there, did you swim in Lake Michigan?
I did, all the time.
You're here on the West Coast, have you swum in the Pacific Ocean?
Yes, I have. Ooh. It's very cold. I also didn't realize it until much later that I was like at Muir Beach and like swimming, you know, just out near the rocks, and was later telling like friends of mine here who are surfers, and they're like, "You were swimming there near the rocks?" And they're like, "I don't even surf there. Oh, it's shit. So sharky." They're like, "It's hella sharky in that area." And I was
thought
like,
they'd be scared of the rocks.
No,
but
no,
the
no.
Sharks.
The sharks.
That's
the sharks
the
like
threat.
The sharks like the rocks, because I feel like that's where fish then
hide,
tend
or
to
they can kind of corner them.
But I have been. The Pacific's very cold.
And you survived.
Yes, I survived.
Are you're writing stories or poetry or?
I guess in terms of genre, I kind of think of myself as in between sort of like experimental fiction and poetry, in terms of I think in the kind of long form or sort of more of like the book format as like a conceptual project, and rather than like the individual poem as like the site of like crafting that and caring really about like syntax and the grammar, the sort of structure. Like, I think I'm someone who's more interested in, thinking of like historical details and material and like the performative and effective like aspects of like writing more than like the individual poem. So I'm just like working on a book here that I've been working on for a few years and trying to finish, which seems like it's going to happen, which is very exciting.
Yay.
Yes.
How are you going to bind that? I mean, you'll probably take it to a publisher, huh?
Well, yeah. I think, yeah.
How do you think they might bind it?
Well, everyone's really into the perfect, yeah, you know.
That's just hot. Like the been hot.
It's real hot. That hot, hot it's glue. Really hot glue. Oh, hot like hot glue.
That's
yeah.
Good. That's a good way to go.
Yeah, which is, you know, and it's like I like or, you know, have friends who've done the more like handcrafted kind of
the saddle
object.
Stitch.
Yeah, and it's beautiful. But I think for me, like, I'm much more interested in like the mass produced, you know.
Get it out there. Just get it out in there. The hands of the reader.
Just get it out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Have you published books before?
I have. I have 3 books and a couple of chat books and yeah.
I was going to ask when you know something is done.
Oh yeah.
I work on a kind of project-based model. Like the thing right now I'm working on is this book that kind of looks at the Iraq war and particularly this relationship with that I recovered kind of after, you know, this person who I like was dating in high school and hadn't seen for 10 years and then came back. And, you know, it was kind of trying to, like, understand this person I once knew who had then, like, experienced all of this, you know, this trauma and, like, committed, you know, these, like, violent acts and the way that they, that had, like, affected them, you know, and trying to see, like, if there's anything, like, salvageable, you know, after that and what's salvageable after war. And so I think for a while, like, I didn't know exactly how to end it, but for me there's usually something where like there has to be something that like complicates the narrative or like the structure, and so for me usually like when I feel like oh that could be done, that it's usually not done and I'm like wait a minute, don't be lazy. And then I look at you like well that's not, you know, and usually like make myself think harder about like what I wanted to do.
You had a reading today. But we were in here, obviously.
Yes.
Do you have any coming up that we could plug on the show?
Yeah, I'm going to be reading December 3rd at E.M. Wolfman.
Oh, yay.
Which is in,
right by 12th Street BART station.
Yes.
Right by the Golden Lotus Vegan Restaurant.
Yes. Delicious. Delicious restaurant. Yeah, so I'll be reading there with David Book, who also, I think his book will be out by then. And then with Danielle LaFrance, who will be coming with, I believe she's based in Vancouver. So yeah, December 3rd.
And it's always great to see a fellow Buckeye.
Yeah.
And as always, congratulations. Okay, well, we're just about to wrap things up.
I think so.
Might get a few final words from Sean. How long have you been at the Headlands?
I've only been here for a year.
Has it been that long even?
It's been, that long-ish. Wow, cool. I think I started at the end of October last year.
Do you have any hot tips for people when they come for interviews and stuff or if they apply here?
Applying for residencies.
The main thing is just showing your best work. That's really it. And knowing why you make what you make. Right, so you can explain it, and
what's the word count on that?
Would you really say? Mean, what's that?
What's the ideal word count for that?
Oh man, yeah, for knowing, you know, being economical and direct is always better.
Good advice.
Yes,
heed that advice, listener.
Yeah,
being direct and then not making up stuff like where you say, you know, I'm addressing, I don't know, some social issue when really you're not.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's in order to justify that you make stuff.
Yeah.
That always feels like a lie. So if you are addressing that, that's great. But usually you can tell.
Like if you got some real white on white.
Yeah.
Minimal
it's like abstract art. You don't have to like say that you're smashing the patriarchy. You know?
Yeah.
You can say that if you're doing it in other ways. But if it's just that... And, You have to like go through real gymnastics to.
Can you cite any really hideous?
You want me to name some names?
No.
Maybe not some names, but if there were any examples of any kind of vague examples of like
vague examples. I mean, I think there's a very specific kind of application that comes in that right away you're thinking, which is it's the application where the work presented doesn't quite match up with the way it's described, and usually the description is something like I'm playing with space, or I'm playing with time, or you know I'm exploring something where you're just thinking, well, that's not really a thing, you know, and, and you kind of know it right away that it's just they don't know what they're doing, you know, and and so that would actually be better to say if they don't know. To just say, you know, I'm confused by my own practice. That might even be better. Maybe not, actually.
Oh, cool. Never heard that before.
Don't do that, actually. Yeah, don't do that one, actually. But it's just saying or, I don't know, like trying to hook up with vague ideas about why creativity is important usually isn't, it's usually a signal. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. Don't do that.
Anyhow, thank you so much for inviting
for
us to be here and for convincing Maysoon to go swimming in the beautiful Pacific Ocean.
I'm so glad that you came. Thanks for
Yay.
Super
broadcasting
fun.
From Headlands.
And as always, congratulations.